From the clouds of the highest mountains, from the corners of the earth, two men have traveled leagues to bring you out. Welcome to the Eagle Boys, Drew Ladd and Nick Huber. Overkill.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Eagle Boys. Once again, we have Jeff Stitzer on the podcast with us today. Very big fans of his from his work, not only from the Halo series, but beyond that. Jeff, how you doing, man?
I'm very well indeed. Thank you guys so much.
Awesome. Thank you so much for coming back on. You know, when he hit me up and said that you were coming back, I was like, let's go.
Yeah, I remember we had such a good conversation last time. I mean, we were getting into like a theater and all the movies that we like, and I mean, it went off the rails there for a second, but you know, we had a good time, so I thought I'd reach out to you again.
I'm glad you did. That's great.
Yeah. So you did Comic-Con recently?
I just did San Diego Comic-Con for the first time last weekend. Originally, I was going to be going there to sign Upper Deck trading cards, which I'd done before. But this was they created this sort of commemorative card that you could only get for the 90 minutes that I was signing it at the Comic-Con itself. Well, they said that, but of course, 2 days later, there are a bunch of them up on eBay where they're charged ridiculous amounts of money for my autograph. But you know, there you go. That was the original plan. And at a certain point, my brilliant agent Neri had suggested that they might be able to get me a table so I could do some signing of the prints and do some selfies and stuff like that that we normally do at conventions. And I didn't find out that we in fact were going to be able to do that until the Tuesday before it happened on Thursday. Quite a few people sort of showed up and went, I didn't know you were going to be here. Neither did I.
Well, here I am.
Here we are. You want a picture?
Yeah. But it was great. I mean, as is always the case, you know, I always think, oh, I'm going to have to go see who else is there. And maybe I've got friends that are there and we can get together and blah, 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 blah. None of that ever happens. Because generally, you know, you're busy at your table and you're signing things and getting pictures taken and talking to fans. And so, you know, I don't know who was at this particular convention. I heard afterwards that apparently there were a number of Hall H, I think, kinds of panels and interviews and things, but I was nowhere near that.
I gotcha.
Yeah.
Did you happen to see any Master Chiefs there while you were there?
I did. There was one Master Chief that walked up to the table, and it was great. He was about 7 feet tall. Very nice. There were quite a few other people that were going by. Some of them I recognized who they were. There was a husband and wife that were there with their two kids. The two kids were dressed as Spider-Man. The wife was dressed as Doc Ock with the big arms coming up over her back. And her husband had painted his face green and had like that cap, very much like the comic book Green Goblin.
Oh,
not
wow!
So much,
yeah.
Willem Dafoe variation, but you know the classic comic.
Yeah, look. I got that you. That's cool. Really cool.
Yeah.
So what's like the craziest thing you've seen at a comic? I know this is the first Comic-Con you've done, but I know this isn't the first convention you've ever done.
Right. It's actually, I don't think it is the first Comic-Con I've done because I did the New York Comic-Con a couple of years ago.
There you go.
And I think I've done some others, but probably the thing that amused me the most, at one point at one of the conventions, somebody had created a remote controlled flood creature.
Oh.
And the idea was that they could, you know, get it to like crawl up to your face. Didn't work too well at that point. I think it was still a work in progress. But then
maybe it's a good thing for the go.
About a year ago, a Master Chief was walking a little flood creature on one of those stiff leashes, like people sometimes do for dogs.
Yeah.
And it was because he could like walk the flood right up you, you know, just go racing over towards you and go right up your body to your face. That was fun.
That was one of the crazy.
That is really cool.
Oh my goodness. So when you're submitting, you know, like you said, you're signing these cards and whatnot. I've seen a lot of videos where people will bring like art and stuff like that when they're coming in. Has anyone presented you any crazy art or anything like that?
Well, it wasn't crazy, but yeah, I've had a lot. In fact, I think it might have been Denver. Was it Denver or Dallas? I can't remember. But I'm going a lot of places this year, which has been great. But this young woman who is an artist presented me with this very cool drawing of Master Chief. There have been all kinds of things that people have given to me. There was an amazing Master Chief helmet that you could set up, and it was on this pedestal that would blow air up, so it would sort of float in the air.
Oh, that's cool as heck, man. Oh my gosh.
But I don't have a lot. I don't have a lot of those sort of collectibles, unlike Steve Downs, who has a room, if I'm not mistaken, in his home in Florida, dedicated to keeping all the stuff that he's collected over the years.
Just like a bunch of Master Chief and Halo stuff that people brought.
Absolutely. I mean, I've seen him online, you know, wielding an energy sword, and
we need to get you one too. It's official.
That's amazing.
Fine. I don't know where I put it in my house.
You could just hang it on the door or something. Like let everyone know this is Jeff Stitzer's house.
If I don't want to be bothered, that would be a good thing to do. It's like, and there's more inside. But
there's more inside.
Exactly. The real weapons are on the inside. But it's whenever somebody gives me something like that, it's always very, very much appreciated.
Yeah.
Because obviously a lot of people spend a lot of time making that kind of thing, as well as getting all dressed up to attend the conventions. And I'm often absolutely agog. I've had a couple of Cortanas show up at my table and, you know, they're all blue and they've like replicated the kind of I don't know exactly what you call it, but
like the patterns on her face and all that.
Yes, absolutely. And you know, they I think in both instances they were wearing like body stockings that had been painted blue and had all the sort of programming stuff on it. It's staggering to me. It's amazing.
The fandom is just amazing, you know what I mean?
Unbelievable. It's unbelievable. So yeah, it is. It's absolutely incredible. And it's one of those things that, you know, I don't know. It's so funny because, you know, having been an actor all my life and dressing up all my life, the idea of going out into public, you know, not to do a play, although I've, you know, gone out and done stuff like that, is always so, I just can't imagine doing it. You know what I mean? And, but the fact that it gives folks so much joy on both sides of the equation, the people who are dressing up and the people who get to see them. It's pretty cool. There was some, who was it? Which one was it, this convention or the one in Dallas? There was a Star Wars figure. It was somebody on stilts. Was it General
Grievous?
Yes, there was a giant General Grievous that was walking around. I didn't get to see it because, you know, you're sort of wedded to your table, but I heard about it in another room. There was this huge, huge thing that was, you know, stalking around, which was very cool.
I always wondered how people get that done. Like, dude, you're telling me you walk around on stilts all day?
Well, yeah, hey, the people who, you know, dress up as Master Chief and encase themselves in the armor and the helmets, and then underneath, you know, they'll occasionally take their helmet off to talk to me, and they're often wearing balaclavas.
Yeah, they got the whole wrap. Yeah.
Wait, what's a balaclava?
That's like one of those sort of masks that you have over your face that is has an opening for your eyes.
Oh,
yeah.
Just like keep their hair. Skiing, you
yeah.
know.
Yeah, it probably rubs on their skin too.
Yeah, and it's like, and they're, the answer, of course, is fairly simple. I always say, how can you walk around all day? They were doing that in Phoenix when it was 126 outside.
It's like a hockey player. You know?
It's and it's like, oh, I've got a fan in my costume. It's like, where
a fan in my
fan in your costume? It's
saying like that's normal.
You can actually get those.
All the armor, has been made with 3D printers that they own.
Yeah,
you know,
Nick has a 3D printer. He's made some pretty cool stuff.
I was just about to say, I'm in progress of creating a Master Chief armor set right now.
I got somewhere around here. I don't know where I have it, but there is a 3D printer Master Chief Buddha, which is a little figurine that is like the Buddha, except instead of the Buddha's head.
Oh, it's like
it's the Master Chief.
I gotcha.
That is really
cross
cool.
Legs and everything. Somewhere around here.
That's really funny. See, some of the things that people come up with like that are just oh, he's getting it. Oh, he's got it.
Right here on the piano. I don't know why. Oh. I don't know. Can you see it?
Oh my gosh, look at that thing.
That's so cool.
Isn't that brilliant?
That's the coolest thing I've seen all day.
That is really, really cool. That
it was fun. Interesting because I had seen this. Again, it might have been in Phoenix. I can't remember where. And I picked it up. I thought, oh, I got to get this for Steve.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So I'm sure he was enjoying that.
I went to an event with him and completely forgot to bring it. And it was far enough away that I couldn't go home and couldn't run home and get it. And then like 6 months later, we were doing a convention together and I remembered to bring it. And I hope he has it in a place of honor. But then I'd mentioned to somebody that it's like, yeah, I mean, I thought at one point I might just hang on to it. And somebody gave that to me. It's like incredible. Yeah,
it really is. I love seeing stuff like that. Again, just the fandom is, you know, to think of something like that, you know,
as soon as Nick gets done with his, we'll take a picture and send it to you.
Please do. Please.
Absolutely.
Do.
Will do. Yes. Yes. That's definitely on the list right there. I think I'm doing the Halo 4 iteration because it was,
gotcha.
It was one of the only files I could find that would fit me.
he's going to be a 5'9" Master Chief.
Not going lore accurate on that one, but it's okay. Yeah,
no, it's
but
okay. It's
totally okay.
It'll still be cool.
Blows my mind. I cannot get over it. It's so cool.
So you did San Diego Comic-Con. That was amazing. I'm sure that was a lot of fun. Have you been working on anything though? Have Halo Studios since they rebranded?
I haven't heard anything yet. Okay. I certainly hope that if something comes up that they could use me for, they will get in touch.
Absolutely. Yeah.
But no, I haven't heard a word about that.
Okay. I gotcha. Yeah. I saw they had a teaser for something coming out and I didn't know if it was a DLC or some with the multiplayer. I didn't know if they were going to have you doing something for that or anything.
Do they just keep reusing your voice?
Well, I don't know. I mean, now in the past, what they've done, it's always been so strange because I remember the first time I went in to record for the second game, they had me doing all these lines I'd already done. And I thought, well, that seems weird. Don't you have all that stuff? And then they kept doing it. Every time I go in, there'd be a whole bunch of things I'd already done that they would have me do again. And what it turned out to be was obviously your voice changes as you get older, and that's certainly been what I've been doing over time. And so in order that it all sound like one thing and not like, you know, a sort of copy and paste from very different games, on a lot of occasions they've just had me do the stuff again, and it's like, oh, okay, I guess, I mean, it's no big deal.
I mean, hey, it keeps you on the team and it works every time. So
absolutely. So it's always been fun when ends up happening.
Wait, so have you done it for every game? Like, did they have you do it for Halo Infinite or anything?
Yeah. I mean, basically every single game I've done, I think I've always had to say double kill, you know?
Yes.
And it's kind of, you would think that would be one they had, but
Yeah, they just have a file of that said, okay, let's just put that
totally,
back in there.
Totally. But, you know, and again, it's like, obviously, if it's all being recorded on a different day, in a different year, in a different studio, because one of the big changes that took place, of course, was that when we did the first one, we did it at Microsoft in Bellevue. They had a studio right there in the building, their corporate, I think it was their corporate headquarters. I don't think it was at Redmond. Was it Redmond? No, I thought it was in Bellevue, but I could be wrong.
Gotcha.
And then afterwards, Bungie started moving around into these various buildings that they found, which allowed them to expand, grow and expand.
Yeah.
So I remember that we ended up going out to Kirkland, which is close to Bellevue. It's another suburb of Seattle. And it was an unmarked building. And when I first drove up, I wasn't even sure if this was where I was headed, but I parked my car and then I went up and there was, you know, there was a guard there that checked you out before they let you in, which was also one of the big changes. And then they had a studio set up every place I went. And we did that. Bungie had their own spaces for all the games that they did after the first one, if I'm not just hallucinating. And then afterwards, when 343 took over, then we just went to various studios in town. So initially, I remember, if I'm not mistaken, we did four, I think, in a studio in Seattle. And then we started doing them out in Kirkland. That's Halo Infinite was done. And in fact, it was interesting because it was literally the work on Halo Infinite had begun just before the pandemic shut everything down.
Mm-hmm.
And the first case of COVID was found at a nursing home that I passed on my way to the recording studio.
Oh, wow. That's actually
I discovered crazy. Later, very right across Lake Constance kind of a thing. But yeah, it was wild. And I think everybody was getting a little bit nervous because things were getting serious. I'm such an idiot. I was only thinking about the trip I was going to take like 2 days later. I'd booked a ticket to go to New York because I thought, yeah, I'm going to go and just hang out for like maybe a month or something. I think I was actually going to be there for 3 months. I was going to be in New York for 3 months. And I found this place to stay and everything. And people are going, are you sure that's a good idea? What about this virus thing? And I'm going, well, I would imagine somebody would have said something if I wasn't supposed to be flying. Yeah.
And so, then, okay. Lo and behold. And then,
literally, I was there on, I think the 12th, I arrived on the 12th, maybe the 11th, because I think it was the 12th now that I think of it, that everything shut down. The day I woke up and started hearing, among other things, a friend of mine had arranged for us to go to a concert at Carnegie Hall, canceled, then to go to someplace at the Jazz at Lincoln Center, canceled, to go see Encore's production, canceled. Everything on Broadway was shutting down. It was all being canceled. The folks at the agency that I'm with in New York, Stuart Talent, I called and I said, what's going on? And they said, we don't know, you know, but there's a good chance we're all going to be going home and having to work from our homes. And I said, well, is there any reason to be here? I mean, he said, I just don't know, you know, and it took a little while. I was there for 1 week. Remember, I was going to be there for like 3 months. I was there
for 1 week. Significantly cut short.
Yeah, it was so creepy and scary, and I thought, this is nuts. I'm going to go home, because if I'm going to be stuck indoors for God knows how long, it might as well be my home.
Exactly.
Seattle, the apartment I lived in, and, you know, I'd be close to doctors if I needed them. I knew where to go to get food, you know, all that kind of stuff. So I got on a plane, and when I'd flown out to New York, it was like, boy, there sure aren't very many people on this flight. Why are there? It's really empty. I've got lots of space.
I'm sure you were loving the plane ride.
It was even more empty on the way home. It was like, oh.
Like probably only like three or five people on that plane.
There were not, there were, I don't think there were more than like two dozen on a, you know,
that's so crazy.
Big old plane. It was freaky. It was really freaky. And, you know, of course, I was going to the airport from the Upper West Side where I've been staying. And the guy I got into the cab with was coughing the entire way to the airport. And I went,
You're like, oh my gosh.
So screwed. So screwed. But it didn't. It didn't happen. So.
Cool. At least, you know, that's a benefit out of it. Didn't get COVID.
Right, right, right.
I can cough it up and say I didn't either.
That was something.
I got COVID. It was like the most sick I've ever been. I've never been more sick from anything else. I think I was sick for like 2 weeks. It was bad. Like when I get the flu, it's like a week. But COVID, it was like 2 weeks and it was bad. I went through like phases of like different. I was like, you know, having a hard time. I was having a hard time.
I knew people who died, and there were also, I've got a very a good friend in New York, fabulous performer named Danny Burstein, who is married to a woman I worked with, Rebecca Luker, and I think they both got it, but he got it, and it was so bad that he wrote about this in the Hollywood Reporter. He was standing in the shower. I think he was coughing up blood, and he could barely keep from falling over. And he went, I think it's time to go to the hospital.
Yeah.
But he couldn't get a cab. There was nobody on the streets. So his son accompanied him. And he would, you know, it was like he was crawling. I mean, he was walking, but he was going so slow because he was having trouble getting his breath.
Yeah.
And he got to the hospital and he said he had a moment where he thought, I'm going to die here. And he didn't. But I think there were some complications with long COVID, if I'm not mistaken. And of course, for a performer, it's like if you have something that compromises your ability to breathe, I mean, that's what you do. You've got to be able to breathe and breathe deeply in order to sustain, you know, acting on a huge theater for like 2,000 people or whatever. Yeah. Like.
And not only that, I know what those theater lights can do to you, how hot those things can get blasting on you like that.
Yeah, you'd be able to get your voice out to thousands of people, you know, that's...
Yeah, it's much harder work than I think people, you know, think it's going to be. In fact, there was just a review of a production of a play at Williamstown Theater, which is a well-known summer regional theater, and they're doing Camino Real by Tennessee Williams.
Very nice.
And a Hollywood actress who has become kind of pretty popular recently, is playing the lead character, and apparently nobody can hear her. She does not have the, you know, the experience or the technique to project her voice.
Oh, and my gosh.
That happens with a lot of people, you know, when they either haven't had any stage experience or if they've been away from it for a long time.
Mm-hmm. No, I totally get that. Cause I mean, when, back in the day, like for me personally, like back in high school, like I was doing theater and, you know, stage shows first. So then when I got into, you know, art like this or doing, you know, digital recording art, how many times have we said turn Nick's mic down? Like he's just
That's a thing.
No, turn Nick's mic down.
There's times where I'm like, my ears are hurting, and we need to turn his mic down right now.
Absolutely. No, I mean my sort of the complaint against me. I remember at one point I was talking to somebody. I think it might have been when I was doing Mary Poppins on Broadway because everybody was mic'd. They all had mics. I hate mics, but I had one. And one of the person at the soundboard said, we barely turn you up.
We just got you on like one. Oh my God. Yeah,
we don't have any problem hearing you.
I get that. I get that with every little being in my heart.
Yeah.
I'm told that like every day of my life. You and I are of the same in that one.
Yeah, you're definitely cut from the same cloth when it comes to that. Let me tell you. I mean, I'm here every week. So.
I hear this every week. You know, I've got to blast his eardrums every week. You know, it's all good.
That's honestly kind of how we are. Cause like, he's like I'm very like chill and like calm and he's like, you know, outwards and it works well. So I don't mind it too bad.
It's a good contrast.
It is a good contrast.
Most teams of two people like that. I mean, it's absolutely built on straight man and comic, you know?
Yep.
One person can be very large and extroverted, and the other person tends to be the one that's like, okay, okay, settle down.
Yeah. Let's get back to the point, Nick, okay? Let's just calm it down.
Exactly.
Yeah, pretty much.
Absolutely.
So another thing I wanted to ask you, I was reading your blog the other day on your website, very interesting blog, by the way. And I was reading that one you wrote about getting an agent, like when you're trying to get into voice acting, like, you know, on a professional scale and like getting an agent. So for those who hadn't read it, you know, could you share with some of our viewers, like, where is, for example, like, where is the best place to start when looking for an agent for representation? Well,
here's the actual truth of the matter. I didn't go looking for agents in most circumstances. They approached me.
Okay.
So for instance, the first agent, and for many, many years, the only agent I had in Seattle, was somebody who had heard from a casting director that I wasn't represented, because at that point, when I first started doing VO work in Seattle, it was thanks to a number of producers who used to come and see us on stage. They loved our work. And one in particular, you know, didn't like working with regular announcer types. He wanted actors. Okay. And he thought we were all hysterically funny. And that's the kind of commercial he would write, parody stuff. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, that's how I started working. And then the engineer that worked with him, people would come in and say, I need somebody for this spot. And he'd go, I know who you can use. And then I get a call out of the blue and it's like, hey, are you available to come in on such and such a day for an hour or two? And it's like, yeah, sure. Okay. So I was doing voice work, not really looking for it because I was sort of focused on theater. But that was going on for quite a while. And then at a certain point, I was called by one of the casting people in town. They were casting a TV movie, and she said, will you come in and audition for this? And I said, sure, why not? I was running a theater at the time. It was probably a dumb idea, but I did go in. And first audition, you know, seemed to go pretty well. I got a call back, and I'm thinking, oh, okay, this might actually happen. And the day that I was called back and waiting to go in to read, I looked down the hall, and a wonderful actor who had moved to the Pacific Northwest, Kevin Tai, came walking up the hallway, and I went,
here we go. All right.
It's so, not going to happen.
And I was going to say, where's the exit?
Kevin Tai is an actor. If you're familiar with the works of John Sayles, wonderful films like Mate One, Eight Men Out, Kevin shows up. He's part of his larger core.
Eight Men Out. I do know that one.
Yeah, David Strath there. And he's a big, florid, Irish kind of looking guy. Maybe you know him from the series Lost. You know, Terry O'Quinn, the guy who's been in the wheelchair. He played Terry's father, the one that threw him out the window.
Oh,
that's Kevin Tai. Well, so this guy comes walking up the hallway and it's like, well, that's not happening for me. But I'm talking to the agent and she said, do you have an agent? I mean, the casting person, do you have an agent? I said, yeah, no, I was thinking about maybe I should, you know, get one. And she said, well, who do you think you'd go with? And I said, well, there's this agent in town. And I mentioned this woman's name. And she said, I'm sure she'd love to have you. There's this new agent getting started in town. And her agency is kind of boutique, you know, so you might get a little bit more attention. I went, oh, okay, that sounds interesting. And of course, as is so often the case with me, it would have taken me maybe a couple of years to like actually get off the couch and do anything about this. Then it called me at 9 a.m. I was literally still asleep. And the phone rang and I picked up like, hello. And it was like, yeah, hi, this is the agent. Topo Swope was her name. And she said, I understand that you're looking for representation. I would love to represent you. And it was like, I woke up pretty quick.
Let me wake up real quick.
Yeah, okay, sure. She said, I can't really meet with you until Monday. This was a Friday morning. She said, can I send you out this afternoon for an audition for Northern Exposure, which was filming in our area? And it was like, I guess.
Sure.
I
mean,
right? I had no photo. Why would I need a photo? People were hiring me. I didn't need one. You know, I didn't have a resume. Again, people were hiring me and knew me in town. It was the weirdest thing. I didn't book that particular job. I did book some other jobs under Topo's sponsorship. But yeah, after that, I had an agent. Same thing happened in New York. Somebody found out I was going to be moving there. A woman named Judy Bowles, who I had known when she was the assistant to another agent. She called me like out of the blue and said, "Steitzer, I understand you're moving to New York." And I was like, "Yeah, that's right." And she said, "Do you have an agent?" I went, "No." Because again, I thought, well, I'll get around to that if I really want to try and find an agent. She said, "I want to be your agent." And I said, "Okay." And it was that simple. Yeah, which is great. Now, sometimes that happens. More often, it doesn't. And in fact, it was weird because there were people I, you know, got to know and worked with in many instances who had been there for years and had never been able to pick up an agent. It's tricky because there's so much about what they do that I think actors don't understand. I was bitching about my agent at an opening. And another agent was there who had come to see a show I directed, which is what we were at the party. And she was an amazing person. In fact, I think I mentioned her name and her book in that blog article. Her book is called Ask an Agent. And
yes, I do remember reading that.
Pertinent. And she was saying, "Jeff, you have to understand, you know, how this works. You know, you talk about getting a call for like an audition for a TV thing. Well, what happens is that all the agencies in town, talent agencies, get a breakdown if they want to see your people, because not everybody's going to even be invited to the table. And then, you know, they're told, send us your five most appropriate people out of maybe a couple of hundred people they handle, right?
Okay.
So it's like assuming they want you, then what they do is they send a little teeny tiny picture of you that goes on a page, at least in those days it was on a page, and then, it's probably being sent on pages on computers now. And there might be like, you know, 80 other people on that page, and there might be a couple of pages of people. And they're just look, that looks interesting. Look, that looks, I mean, that's what you're up against. And it's not like the agent can do much more than decide that you're one of the few five people, whatever, that they're going to submit. And then after that, you have to catch their eye. You have to be what they're looking for. Maybe they've heard you before for something, you know, and they go, "Let's hear him again for this." That's happened to me where, you know, the second time it's like, didn't work for the first time. Second time it worked. They wanted me, you know, it's like, great. So there's an awful lot of stuff that we as actors don't really understand. But as far as like voice acting is concerned and getting an agent, everything is very different than it was when I was starting out. As I say, I had an agent, and I would get a call from the agent saying, "You have an audition at such and such studio, you know, in a day's time, in 2 days' time, you know, in the morning, in the afternoon, whatever it is, you know, can you do that? You know, and this is when this is going to be happening, and this is what they're looking for, and, you know, stop by and pick up the copy, the sides." So, I mean, it wasn't even like, you know, it wasn't like it was coming from computers and stuff. You had to go get the material and read it in the office and all that kind of stuff. And then you go down and you'd park your car and you go in, and there'd be all your pals that could possibly be doing it instead of you. And you'd catch up and, you know, hang around and have a good time. And then you get called in, you do the audition, then you'd leave. All of that's changed. None of that happens now. Now you have to have your own studio and you have to sound good. Because there's a possibility, depending on where you live, because you can live anywhere now. It used to be if you want to get cast in New York, you lived in New York. If you wanted to get cast in Los Angeles, you lived in Los Angeles, wherever it was. Now you can pretty much look for work anywhere.
Just be able to send a video in.
You have to have the right setup. If it's a video situation, yeah, you've got to be able to video yourself in a way that looks surprisingly professional. And I hate it. I hate that, doing the videos. It just
feels impersonal, you know?
You would rather do it in person?
Oh, God, yeah. Absolutely. I mean, for a number of reasons, not the least of which is that, you know, as any actor will tell you, there's a certain amount of nerves that you get when you walk into a room where the people who are going to be judging you are.
Yeah.
Just for the territory. But it also gives you a little bit of a buzz, you know, that sometimes helps you focus.
Yep.
Yeah.
And gives you a little bit more energy in your performance. Whereas when if you're doing it at home and a friend is taping you, it's kind of like, you know, you don't care what they think. And it's hard to imagine who is going to be in the other end of this recording and watching you. Whereas if you're doing it in a room, you know.
Yeah.
You know.
What's been your favorite part to play?
Ever?
Yeah, like is there like a character or something, like a sailor, or like maybe like a chef or
well, anymore. I tend to get, it just happened again today. The last thing I auditioned for was a voice thing. It was for a character called Gramps.
Okay.
Okay.
Bear called Gramps.
Okay. Is this a TV show or a game?
It was a TV thing.
Very nice.
And then I just got another audition and the character is called Gramps. So
really?
I think, yeah, literally, it's a different Gramps because I had to read it. It's like, is this what I was just auditioning?
I just auditioned for this. Why are we doing it again?
Yeah, no, it's just different. Well, sometimes if they come back to you, it's like, that's good. But so I've got to get that done. And, you know, it's even in the old days, very often when you got the stuff sent to you on the computer, there would be art that they would send along of how they imagine the character. I haven't seen that in a couple of years now. It's just the copy. And there's not a lot of, you know, background. There's not a lot of what is, I mean, the thing that I'm going to be auditioning for that I'm going to be working on probably later tonight, I have no idea what it is. I don't know what this series is called. I don't know anything about it. You know, there's a little bit of information, which is helpful. But it's not much. And I think a lot of it is, okay, it's you, right? Being an older guy than you are, maybe, although I'm older than the character specs, which are 50s to 60s. It's kind of like, well, you know, I'm sort of close to that. But, I mean, anymore, you know, really, legitimately, I should only be called in when they're looking for corpses. You know, it's kind of like, he's that old. But I'm happy
don't
to get
say this, that, man.
I'm happy to get this opportunity.
But no, yeah, I think you would play a great Gramps.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it. I think
you'd do great.
Thank you. So as far as getting agents are concerned, you got to know how things work, number one. And I'm thinking, again, mostly of voiceover, you know, because it's a little bit different for everything, you know. I believe that they are bringing people in for stage things. And again, you just need to be near where the auditions are happening so they can call you in or willing to go. I know an actor who lives, I think, in Ohio. Wonderful actor, Guy Boyd is his name.
That's where we live.
And yeah, and basically he'll fly to New York if something comes up where he needs to be seen. Or if he's doing a reading, you know, of a new play, he'll fly to New York and he'll do the reading and then go home. He doesn't want to live in New York. And it's like, that's great if you can do
that. I mean,
that.
I get that. I do love New York. Don't get me wrong. New York is great. My brother lived there for a little bit. Just visiting for me. For me personally, just visiting.
Sadly, I've always loved almost every place I've visited or lived. I mean, I can see the sort of upside of just about all of it. But, and I do love New York. I love
New
York.
Oh, it's a beautiful city.
There's nothing like running around on the weekend in New York, especially on a Sunday when it is quite quiet.
Oh, yeah. You know?
And you're not fighting crowds everywhere for the most part. Yeah, I love it. So anyway, it depends on what you're going to be auditioning for. And then as far as picking up an agent, you got to have something to show them, you know? I mean, the old sort of catch 22 is how do you get an agent? You know, they've got to see you work. Well, how do you get work? You have to have an agent. So it's like, that's the thing. And getting people out to see you, they do their best. I mean, I could not do the job that any of my agents do. Their hours are impossibly long. In the case of my theatrical agent, when I had her in New York, she was flying all over the country to see her clients work, you know?
Oh, wow.
Just to support them, but also to go, okay, great, and confer with them and talk about what the next step might be. A lot of people get managers for the same thing. For VO, you got to have a studio that you can produce good, I mean, really excellent quality sound. You have to know how to use a mic. You know, you've got to be able to sort of have a great demo before you ever run around and present yourself to an agent. You know, you got to have all that stuff.
But you had agents calling you, right? You had agents calling you.
That was then. That was
yeah.
Then.
Okay.
You know, it's a very different world.
It's a very different game.
But and even there, you know, I will say this. You know, I knew the casting director that I was auditioning for, who had the friend who was starting the boutique agency. That was connection.
Yep.
Right. I've been called in by her before. Terrific person. I adore her still. And then the same thing with the woman who asked to be my agent in New York, my theatrical agent, which was for film and television and theater. And again, I knew her, you know? So that's also one of the things that can be very helpful. You know, and I'd known her. It was weird because I was a director and the person she worked for was a play agent, represented her client, started off with Sam Shepard. He was her big client. And it's like, you know, that was all you needed. So Judy, who was her, you know, assistant and then took over the agency, had known me in that capacity in a way. I mean, a lot of actors can't get as close as a director can get to a casting person or an agent. I was lucky in that respect.
Very nice.
So, yeah. I think the best thing you can do is try to accrue enough credits that somebody is going to say, we can trust this person to be sent out by us and they are not going to clutch or be offensive. Or they're gonna show well. If yes. You can't do that, you know, don't bother. And then the other thing you have to understand is they may have already six people very like you, who probably have more experience, who probably have done more film, TV, theater. You know, my dressing roommate hit Mary. Both my dressing roommates in when I was doing Mary Poppins on Broadway. That was my second Broadway show.
Yeah.
They had done like a dozen each. I mean, and it was like, you know, the guy who was playing a little tiny part in Mary Poppins had been in Mamma Mia. He had been in Rocky Horror Show on Broadway.
Oh,
he
wow.
had been on all these different things, you know, and the other guy had been in Cats and had done he'd been in City of Angels, all these, you know, big deal shows.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's that's what you're up against. So you have to understand that, you know.
I think that is a big curve. For some people, I think that is kind of a curve is going in there. Cause like you want to be confident, you know, if you get the chance to have an audition, like you want to be confident and be like, I'm going to clutch this. It's going to be great. Like, you know, I'm going to get that part. And then you walk in and you see, oh, Timothy Chalamet's here. Awesome. You know?
Yeah.
Yeah, that would be discouraging to me if I walked in there and I saw like Tom Cruise was walking in there.
So I did a audition when I was like, I think I was like 9 or 10 years old. And
I think your mom told me about that.
Really?
Yeah.
And my mom told you that?
I think so.
But she was, my mom, like they told her that they wanted to like send us out to like California or something like that. But I'm like, but why? Like I said, you know what I mean? Like, what's the catch?
Too young to grasp that at the time.
Yeah, I was like, I'm not. And I said I didn't want to do it. So we just never did it.
Wow. But
yeah, had a chance to move to California and I blew it because.
There's a wonderful guy. I may have mentioned him in one of the blogs. I can't remember who I did. Michael Kostroff is his name. And he has an online course on auditioning, which is Audition Psych 101, I think is what he calls it. It is extraordinary because he basically clears the field of all the clutter you tend to carry into an audition. Very often you walk in there and you know, you're gonna try and give them what they want, even though there's no way you can know what they are looking for, you know, and you can't worry about that, you know, about them. You have to worry about you, and that's all you have to worry about. Yep. Plus, the thing he says, which I cackle every time I think about it, he says, there's a dirty little secret, and he doesn't introduce this until a couple of episodes into these classes that he taught. I got it. You know, I still do classes.
Yeah.
And he says, this is the one thing that you need to know when you walk into an audition. You're not going to get the frickin' job. You're not going to get it. Now, as soon as you've accepted that, all that pressure is gone, right?
Yeah.
And instead, you can look at this as an opportunity to do the thing you want to do more than anything else in the world. And that is, you know, for those few minutes, whatever it is, you're the star of this show. Nobody else, right? He was called in, I think it was for Les Mis, if I'm not mistaken. They called him in over and over and over again. They kept this to the point where the casting folks were apologizing. He's like, Michael, we're sorry. He said, nah, are you kidding? You know, I get to do it. And he walked in. And
whatever, man.
Somebody at the table even mentioned it. And he said, you know what? I'm the only person in this room who's going to be playing Thénardier today. So it's like, I'm fine.
It's you know, a great mentality to have. It really is.
You know, and it's a great way to go into it. You know, he also, I believe, says that you're there, you're going to be able to help you. What you've got may solve their problem. That's all you have to do. You know, it's just show them that you can solve their problem. You can give them whatever they may or may not be looking for. They may not know what they're looking for, you know?
That's a good point.
That is a very good point.
So often, you know, and the whole Timothy Chalamet thing.
Yeah.
When I went up to Mary Poppins, I remember walking into the room of the people who'd been called back. And there were only like five of us, maybe. And one of them was a guy named Harvey Evans. Harvey Evans is one of the best known, best loved Broadway singer, dancer, performers ever. He was in the original production of Stephen Sondheim's Follies.
Yes.
A television production of Dames at Sea with Anne Margaret. I mean, you know, his credentials just go on for days.
Yeah.
And I thought, well, there's no way. There's no way I'm going to get this job. And I got it. So it's like, you know, yeah, Timothy Chalamet was in that exact same position at some point. He walked in and he saw whoever the hot younger actor of his age group was at the time, may have thought to himself, there's no way. Or he might have thought, who knows? Could be me, you know?
He was probably in there like, James Franco? All right, I'm out of here.
You know what I mean? But you just don't do that. You just have to sort of go, you've got what you've got, you know? Nobody else has what you have to offer. Nobody else can give the performance you can give. They'll give another performance. They'll give their performance. You know, it might be preferred by casting people that time. Next time, it might be you.
That's actually the best way I've ever heard that put. That's a
very healthy great way to way. Put that. Yeah, that's nice. I like that a lot.
Yeah.
Speaking of performances, just a little segue here. I kind of wanted to do something, and I wanted to know if you were interested in doing this. So I thought it'd be fun for the viewers if we, I don't want to say tested your memory, but just wanted to see if you remember some of the voice lines from the Halo multiplayer, like on certain terms of, let's say, I'm going to ask, what do you get when you kill two enemies quickly?
Double kill.
Very nice. That is correct. That is correct.
That's good.
All right. I'm going to ask you five of them and just see how we do. You know, this no pressure.
No. Oh, no pressure. My ass. This is terrible. I am so stupid about this game. I won't remember. You know,
well, let's see what happens. Somebody sat
down and explained, you know what? I was just guessing on that one. It's like nobody said if you kill two people, it's a double kill. It's like, okay, well, I know where we go from here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. So first one. you kill four enemies quickly, what do you get?
Kiltacular.
Overkill, actually.
Overkill. I mean, overkill. I meant overkill.
There you go. There you go.
Now,
you just answered it the last time. We'll ask it anyway. Kill five enemies quickly.
Kiltacular.
Kiltacular. That's it.
Yeah.
And this one, I've heard you say before, it's one of my favorite ones. What do you get when you kill seven enemies quickly?
Is that Kilimanjaro?
That is Kilimanjaro. That is correct. And last one. This one might be a little different, but you kill 30 enemies in a row without dying.
Would that be Killionaire?
That would be Invincible.
Oh!
Invincible.
All right. Well, that's good to know.
It's all good. I just wanted to, I thought it'd be fun to do that. I thought it just, you know, just to hear you say that, you know, I don't know. That's just something I had an idea.
No, I had a lot of fun, you know, showing my ignorance. I haven't played this game in years. Well, obviously. Anyway. No.
And that's the deal. We know that it's just been a while since you've been behind the Halo Studios mics and all that. So, you know, again.
No, I thought it was great. That was very enjoyable.
Oh, no, no. You have to understand. It's like nobody ever explained what any of that meant.
Oh, really?
When I recorded all the medals, nobody said, this is
really?
No.
Actually, never. That's even more surprising than you know, just not getting even a picture.
Nobody ever told me anything except things like, okay, now you're getting close to the end of this thing. It's, you know, you're counting down 10 seconds remaining, you know, 5 seconds or 1 second, you know, you obviously you're trying to goose that up. That they would explain, but for the rest of it, no, I don't recall them ever saying, it's like, now, Jeff, this is what happens when you're running riot.
Yeah, there it is. See?
Jeff, can you literally say one for me?
Literally, there. I will just 1 second. There was I've told this story before, but when we were doing one of the games, I had the line, zombie killing spree. And I went, wait a minute. What? Zombie? Are there zombies in this game? And they went, I said, well, what is that all about? And they said, can't tell you. And it's like, okay, never mind. You know,
he literally looked at you and said, don't worry about it. Say it.
Yeah, basically, it's like, it was just, you know, I was just guessing most of the time. What was it you wanted to hear me say?
Infected.
Infected.
Yes.
That's one of the best ones in my opinion.
That is one of the best ones.
That's good to know. I mean, it was hysterical. I've done so many of these over the years, and I just,
what a unique talent though to be applied to. I mean, everything kind of just fit together with that, you know, like you have that like very specific voice. It's like a cool video game voice. I mean, it sounds awesome and it just fit like perfectly with Halo. Like it really kind of characterized like multiplayer and you know, all the other types of games that they have. So I think it's, you know, awesome, honestly.
Well, I mean, you know, again, with casting, you know, I've learned, having been on both sides of the table, because I've directed 180 professional theatrical productions over the years. That's a lot.
That is a lot. Like, I was looking at some of your credentials. And
when
yeah,
you were standing, you know, when you're sitting there and you're watching people, the sorts of considerations that go into making your decisions are just insane. The kinds of things you think about. I've known of shows where people were cast. It was a production of Christmas Carol that recurred every year. There were people who were cast because they would fit into the costume. Very and others true. Who weren't because they wouldn't.
Oh, interesting.
I could see that.
Yeah. And it's like that. It was, that's all, you know, that was the bottom line.
I kind of want to hear who else like auditioned for like your voice on Halo. Like I wonder what the competition was.
I have no idea. I think what happened was nobody auditioned for the narrator. or the announcer. Nobody did. What we all did was we did three things. We read The Master Chief. We read an alien. I think it might have been Arbiter, although back then I didn't know a lot.
Elites, Arbiter, kind of all the same.
I didn't know what that was. I didn't know what a Master Chief was.
Yeah.
And then I knew it was a battle game. And at the end of our audition, and it was the end because they didn't want us to, you know, fry our vocal cords before we'd done the audition. We had to scream like we were being massacred. Everybody. And that's all anybody did.
That's awesome.
So it's like, as I understand it, I don't think that, you know, David Scully, who played Sergeant Johnson, read any of Sergeant Johnson. I just think that they were, you know, maybe at some point they called him back and said, you know, we liked your audition as this other stuff. But the thing that everybody did initially was that. And the women all did Cortana and screamed.
Just like just death scream, you know, just going crazy.
Yeah, exactly. You know, it was great fun to do.
Yeah, that's real funny.
You might imagine. But yeah, that's sort of what it was. And so I don't believe anybody actually, including me, auditioned to be the announcer. I think what happened was that, you know, once they had sort of heard everybody and gotten some sense of what they could do, then they thought, now that guy, that's Sergeant Johnson, or you know what, that's a grunt, or that's this, that, or the other. And with me, it was like, I think that might be the announcer, you know?
Yeah.
But weirdly, I didn't do that voice in my audition. And when I showed up to do the recording, and Marty O'Donnell insists that my memory is faulty in a lot of different areas, but the way I remember it is we walked into the recording booth and he said something like, okay, what are we going to do? And it was like, I don't know.
You tell me.
I know nothing about the game. I've seen a Halo ring. You know, they showed me that somebody was working on, and a few of the, you know, animated things that they were doing. It was like, that's cool. But I didn't, you know, it was clearly outer space. And it was clearly soldiers, but that was it. I didn't know anything else.
So I mean, at that point in development.
He said, you auditioned for Master Chief, right? And I said, yeah. And he said, okay, what'd you do? And I said, I was doing sort of a Master Chief kind of thing like that.
Very nice.
And he said, okay, good. He said, can you do Monster Truck Rally? And it was like, Monster Truck Rally. I said, yeah. Good. And he said, and you did an alien? I was like, oh yes, I did this alien.
Ooh.
You know. But okay. And then we sort of smushed it all together. And, you know, it was like, that was how, you know, I unfreaking believable. You can hear a little bit of the alien, you can hear a little bit of the Monster Truck Rally.
Yeah.
Always pulling me back. It's like, just rein that in a hair if you could, you know.
And you're just like, why are we reining things in? Let's go wild here. Like, let's have fun.
And that's the thing. Anybody who's been, you know, when you're in a recording booth, there's only so much oxygen. And I'm convinced that at a certain point I'd get loopy. And then I would just be like, bleh, you know, I would get out of control. The note I would get more often than the other note was, can we just speed it up a little bit, Jeff? And it's like, okay,
yeah. If you say so.
Yeah, I would go, I would just go through all that, you know.
Like, almost like the slow motion.
We do need to get this moving along. That's my memory.
Oh, I love that.
Very interesting.
Oh, goodness. Jeff, I didn't have anything else. Did you?
No, I think that's all I have.
Jeff, I think that's going to do it for our time here. Thank you again so much for taking the time out. You are
very, very welcome, guys.
Yeah, we love having you on, and hopefully you'll be seeing my Master Chief suit here pretty soon. You know, see how that works out, you know?
Just get a random email one day of someone in a
just in a suit, and I'm just...
Yeah. Incredible.
Is there anything you wanted to plug, like any socials or anything like that, before we get off here?
Well, let me think. As I've mentioned, I think in the past on some of these podcasts, I am available for personalized videos at cameo.com. You can find me there if you're looking for a birthday greeting or a graduation or a wedding thing. You know, there's a whole bunch of things that I will do videos for you about.
Very nice.
And the other thing I would suggest is that if people are interested in, you saw the blogs that I did about getting into voiceover, and, you know, we sort of touched on it, and I realized I was, you know, sort of, I think I'm a little bit more coherent in the blog than I was today. But if you go to Jeff's, if you go to jeffsteitzervoiceactor.com and go to my blog section, there are a number of different blogs. Some of them are answers to questions that I heard all the time, like, how did you get into voice acting? Or how did you, you know, why did you want to become an actor? And I talk about all that stuff in the various blogs.
Yes, very interesting blog. I've checked it out myself, and I hope everybody else will too. Do you have any dates, any more conventions coming up soon?
Well, I can't mention one, okay. I guess, because it hasn't been formally announced.
Okay.
I mentioned it in San Diego, and I was told in no uncertain terms by my agent, it's like, we haven't announced that yet. And it's like, okay.
Cool.
Yeah, I'm not doing anything else there. And then there are a couple of things that are kind of in the offing, perhaps, but nothing I can really talk about right now.
Hey, nothing wrong with that. NDAs are NDAs for a reason.
Very mysterious. Oh,
yeah. Very mysterious. We got a secret event coming up with Jeff Stites here. Keep on a lookout for that. You'll be seeing him coming up at a secret convention. We'll talk about it.
Hopefully you will. Yes, that would be grand.
That would be grand.
I think I've done like 7 this year, 6 or 7.
And the train keeps on rolling, you know?
I love it. I mean, I just love meeting, you know, the fans are insane. They're amazing.
Great, you know? Yeah,
really are.
Well, anyway, Jeff, one more time, thank you so much for taking the time out with us today. It was great talking with you. And everybody, please sure to check out all the links in the description below for Jeff's blog. And like we said, look out for a secret, maybe not announced yet, con. Maybe we'll talk about that later.
When we can announce things, they will be announced.
When they will be announced, we will hear about it. And everyone, please subscribe to our Spotify as well as our YouTube channel. And check us out on Apple Podcasts and Patreon. We got 2-tier subscription. Go ahead and check that out. And Jeff, one more time, thank you again. And we will catch you all on the next episode.
Thank you, Jeff.
Thank you, Jeff.
You're welcome, guys. Thank you.